Thank you for coming to this presentation. This is regarding the full year results of Wizz Air for fiscal 2018. The period ended on the 31st of March. Let me start, but I'm just walking over to that place. First of all, let me just give you a highlight on the period what we are reporting today. We delivered 275 million euros of net profit, which is a 22% increase versus the underlying profit of last financial year, fiscal 2017, and delivered EBITDA margin of 34%, which is one of the highest in the industry. It was heavy growth in terms of capacity and passenger volume. Our passenger growth was 25%, and we delivered 30 million passengers in this financial year. Very importantly, we have been increasing our cost advantage versus the market. We delivered flat ex-fuel unit cost. When you put that in context, you see that the airlines who have been reporting results actually have been creeping unit cost. We believe that we are having a better position from a cost perspective compared to the market. Our market share in Central and Eastern Europe increased quite a bit, 3 points to 42%, when it's related to the LCC sphere. I would note that our largest markets like Hungary, Poland, Romania, and Bulgaria account more than 50% of their capacity on low-cost carriers. LCC expansion has been a significant phenomenon in the core Central and Eastern European markets. We have been gaining ground on the A321. Now the A321 is rolled over the network and delivering 35% of the total seats of the airline. You recall the A321 is a 10% lower unit cost production than the A320. Actually, we are very pleased with seeing that aircraft economics flowing through the system. Obviously, that helps us offset the headwinds we are seeing in the market, such as fuel price increase, labor inflation, and some more disruption costs, which we will elaborate on later. In the period, we received the investment-grade rating from two credit rating agencies. Obviously, we are very happy with that development. I think this is just underpinning the structural strengths of the business and the liquidity and financial strengths of the company. We are guiding the market with regard to fiscal 2019 net profit of 310 million-340 million euros. We are pretty much seeing the profit trends continuing going into next financial year. A big year for us. Passengers are up 25% to 30 million. We inducted a significant number of aircraft, 14 aircraft, moving the fleet to a total of 93 A320s and A321. We opened up a few new airports. Now we are covering 141 airports. We operate from 27 bases in Europe in 16 countries, mostly in Central and Eastern Europe, partly also in Western Europe now. Obviously, the growth of the business requires the growth of the organization. Recruited quite a lot of people. Now we have 3,600 people working for the company, and we keep expanding our footprint across the whole of Europe, and now we are operational in 44 countries. Actually, that's more than any other low-cost carriers in Europe. A significant volume of operations. I would just highlight utilization, 12.7 hours on average, is one of the best in the entire industry. We time to time look at Airbus's report when they track aircraft utilization airline by airline. We tend to score significantly ahead of the game compared to other airlines. Very importantly, actually, we operate the fleet. technical dispatch reliability and regularity are one of the highest in the industry as well. We delivered close to 80% on-time performance. This is slightly less than what we would have hoped. This is mainly resulting from the disruptive environment. We have been seeing many more ATC strikes, airport closures, weather-related issues as well, resulting in longer delays and more cancellations than in previous years. Load factor moved up 1.3% from 90% to 91.3%. Obviously, we are pleased with that development. So, a very neat and tight operation, but delivering a very strong metrics. If you look at our market positions in our core markets, you can see that we are mostly number one or number two in our markets when compared to other low-cost carriers. And as said before, in most of these markets, actually the LCC capacity is now exceeding half of the total market capacity. Certainly this is the case in the larger markets, Poland, Romania, Hungary, and Bulgaria, but many other markets as well. We have been building our market position, moved market share from 39 to 42%. We are the number one low-cost carrier in Central and East Europe, significantly ahead of the others. But it is not only being the number one brand in Central and East Europe. I think we have been gaining a lot of ground by growing our awareness in Western Europe as well. The United Kingdom is a good example. As you recall, we established a London Luton base, which was migrated into the operational platform of Wizz Air UK. That airline is now operational, and as a result, I think Wizz Air has become more known. The British consumers are becoming more aware of our activities here in the country, and we'll continue to build on that that strength. But this is also the case in the rest of Europe, Western Europe, that as we are gaining market positions and we are flying more and more, the market is becoming increasingly aware of the company. But with those initial thoughts, I would like to turn it over to Ian, who's going to take us through the financial results of the company, and I will take it back for some more strategic matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. So moving on to the financial review. While growth is very important to us, we don't grow for the sake of growth. Financial performance, strong metrics is key to our business. We want to grow as fast as we possibly can, but we want to maintain margins in the region of 14 to 15%. These are industry-leading profit margins and arguably growing at double the pace of our nearest competitor. If you look on to slide 8, revenues have increased 24% to 1.95 billion euros. EBITDA has increased 22% to 659 million euros. Net profits increased 22% to 275 million euros. And that all translates into a very strong cash flow generation, up 27% to 980 million. So that's an increase of nearly over 200 million euros on our free cash balance. These numbers flow into EBITDA margins. Joseph highlighted some of the highest in the industry of 34% and a net profit margin fairly close to last year of 14%. Maybe give you a flavor of some of the drivers of the revenue performance. This time last year, we were guiding RASK slightly positive, so we delivered a plus 0.4% on our RASK. I think it's important to look at some of the drivers of that. We added 6 million more seats to 32 million seats to the market. That's 24% capacity growth. We grew passenger numbers 25%. We pushed higher our load factors higher, stimulating more traffic. That's up 1.3 percentage points. And we're flying larger aircraft, A321s. At the end of the year, we had 26, 35% of the seat capacity. These have 50 extra seats. That's 28% more capacity. So you're adding 28 more percent capacity to those markets. This has a diluting effect, but we managed to recover that. We fly further, and our ticket prices are even lower. Our base fares are even lower. I'll come on to the ancillary per pax, which was flat year on year, which was a slight a disappointment, but I can elaborate a little bit more further on that. So all of these factors together, the growth, the load factors, the larger aircraft, flying further, lower ticket prices stimulating even more traffic, and we delivered on what we said at the beginning of the year at a slightly positive RASK of 0.4%. There's a little table bottom right to give you a flavor. I mean, the hot topic at the moment is fuel. What I wanted to highlight is that fuel prices do translate into higher fares. We are seeing that. The guidance that we set this morning is seeing a constructive market in that. Brent year on year is up 16%. Our passenger growth is up 25%, so that's a 6 percentage point increase. As you go into fiscal 19, clearly we need to lever our capacity down a touch to manage that. But we were able to drive our fares even lower and deliver industry-leading margins. So I think from the revenue side of the equation, we had a very strong performance in fiscal 18. Moving to the most important slide of the deck, our focus on ultra-low cost is undiminished. This business, the airline business is a commodity business. So in order to be able to be the most competitive, you have to have the lowest possible cost. Lowest cost will always win. Whether there's currency fluctuations, whether there's high fuel prices, whether economic shocks, whether there's geopolitical issues in any of our markets, having the lowest cost means you will have the competitive edge against any of your competitors. Every year has a slightly different story, so maybe give you a flavor of what we saw last year. The two main items, staff costs, the industry seeing inflation coming through, certainly from the pilot community. So staff costs on a unit cost basis were up 5.5%. Fuel prices, we saw the price of fuel increase 10.4%, so that saw some inflation coming through. And as I highlighted a year ago, depreciation, we were seeing the back end of a higher depreciation. That was up a very large 27%. And as I also indicated, as we go into fiscal 19, that will turn negative. So you can expect something certainly of the magnitude of minus 5% on depreciation unit cost, maybe slightly better, depending on the fleet structure. So I think the key message that Joe highlighted as well is that the relative performance of our cost discipline remains undiminished. And while competitors are seeing cost creep across the board, not only do we have a very disciplined, tight cost base, but when we look ahead to the A321s, the higher proportion of seats coming into our fleet, when you look at the NEOs, when you look at the stronger balance sheet, when you look at the potential options we have on aircraft financing, certainly we see a lot of opportunities to further lower those costs. We're going to be guiding minus one on ex-fuel CASK this year, and as we see the NEOs coming on board, which have 9 extra seats and also the benefit of the on-balance sheet financing to be decided, we'll expect to see that to continue, that further decrease going into fiscal 20 and also fiscal 21. So I think the picture is very bright from a cost perspective with Wizz Air. On to the ancillary. This is a tale of two halves. We had a very strong performance in the first half. I was here 6 months ago saying that we delivered 1.5 euros per pax in the first half. Now, in terms of some numbers, we delivered 15.6 million passengers in the first half. That translates into 23 million euros that we delivered incrementally on the first half. In October, I think you remember, we changed our cabin bag policy, so we used to charge for cabin bags. There were a number of pressures which suggested we had to change that. We changed that in October, so we stopped charging for cabin bags. And the one item that we underestimated was the impact it would have on checked-in bags. Simply, people were not taking their bags and checking them in. Rather, they were taken to the aircraft and then being put into the hold. So we underestimated the impact of that going into the second half. So disappointingly, we had a year-on-year performance of flat, 27.2. But what I would highlight is that ancillary revenue remains a key pillar to our business model. Getting that trend back to positive, we'll start seeing that back in fiscal 19. There'll be a little bit of headwind going into the first quarter, but we have actions in place to reverse that trend, and you'll start seeing that in Q2. And the year-on-year effect, you'll see the benefit going into the second half. The other positive looking into the numbers is that the value add, those areas that people actually want to pay for, rather than the perceived punitive cost of baggage, that was up 2 euros. So we're seeing a continued traction on all of those, whether it's allocated seating, the mobile penetration, family bundles, and the like. On to our balance sheet strength. Cash increased 23%, so we have 1.142 billion euros of cash, of which nearly a billion of that is free cash. So the cash generation remains very strong. If you look at our business model is fairly simple. Cash tends to follow profit. The net cash increase was 212 million euros year on year. One thing that did change during the year is that we put in two significant orders for aircraft. The first one was 10 additional COs. essentially to ensure that we had the supply for the calendar year 2018 and 2019 wrapped up. So that was five additional aircraft in 18, five additional aircraft in 19. Given the proximity of those deliveries, we had to increase our deposits to Airbus in the tune of €125 million. So if you have €125 million add to the €212 million, you can see that the cash generation remains very, very healthy. Other items, cash collateral and letters of credit facilities continue. One thing I would draw your attention to is the credit rating that Joe highlighted. So in the case of Moody's and Fitch, Baa3, BBB flat was particularly pleasing to report over the past couple of months. This not only enables us to access capital markets, but it certainly has a huge impact on other contract negotiations, whether it's sale and leaseback contracts, whether it's with third parties. So having that credit rating and the assignment by Moody's and Fitch certainly helps us with all other cost areas and will help us lower costs even further in all categories. In terms of leverage, what you're seeing today is a 1.5 times. That's improved from 1.7. Really, that's a function of the FX rate. So when you look at the calculation of leverage, essentially it's the dollar leases that are capitalized. So nothing significantly changed in terms of our business, just the FX rate. Where do we want to be? Questions asked in terms of what sort of leverage. We want to maintain or have better metrics when we look with Moody's and Fitch. So maintaining that rating will remain a key objective for us. IFRS 16 is a topic that's being talked about, and if you look at the IFRS 16 number, it's around about €1.5 billion that would be on our balance sheet today if we were to convert to IFRS 16. That number will be dropping to €1.3 billion. So I think a few surprises in terms of the magnitude, certainly a lot lower than I think a number of analysts had been expecting in terms of that impact. So to full year guidance, I think maybe it's worth touching on a couple of the areas. In terms of capacity, we had been indicating something north of 20. Last year it was 24%. We were suggesting it would be around about 22-23%. We'll be tempering that down to 20, which is still more than double than our nearest competitor. That will be skewed more towards the back end of the year, 21% over the summer. We're very happy with what we're seeing in the summer, so we'll be flying at full capacity. H2, though, that's the area where you tend to be investing more into routes, but the high fuel price suggests that we might want to be slowing down a touch. So on an annual basis, capacity growth, we should be looking around about 20%. Stage length will be relatively similar, slight increase. Load factors, we believe that you could be pushing load factors even higher, and actually, if you're slowing down your growth a touch, load factors is a great vehicle to get more passengers onto your plane. Fuel prices, I think, are well documented. Onto the ex-fuel side of the equation, I think there are two items. One I highlighted is depreciation will start to give us some tailwinds, but crew costs will be giving us more headwinds. So crew costs, you should put in your numbers around about 8 to 9% on a unit cost basis. Depreciation, we should be seeing an improvement around about 5%. So minus 5% on a unit cost basis. All other areas broadly in line, some improvements pretty much across the board in that one. Onto the RASC, a hot topic. So we are pretty much, we pretty much closed Q1. We have April, May pretty much in the bag, good forward visibility onto June. We're seeing flat RASC in Q1, which I think is a very good performance. Especially there's no Easter. Last year we suggested Easter was to the tune of about 17 million, now depending on where the days of Easter sit, whether it's Orthodox or other. So to deliver a flat RASC certainly highlights that the revenue environment remains constructive. If you want to look in and break it into quarters, so it would be flattish RASC in the first quarter. Second quarter you should be looking somewhere to the tune of about 3%, and the second half of the year we should be looking more to the tune of around about 4%. And in terms of the demand, what I would highlight is that I think Wizz Air is fairly uniquely positioned. The GDP growth in a number of our markets, Romania is forecast at 7.5%, Bulgaria is 6%, Serbia 5.9%, Ukraine 5.5%, Hungary 3.6%. So again, I think if you look at the relatively constructive capacity environment combined with, I would say, a fairly robust to strong demand environment, puts us very well placed. So we believe that the fuel pricing will be flowing straight through to the fares and we'll be able to deliver net profits to the tune of between €310 to €340 million.
We remain focused on growing Central and Eastern Europe. That's our core territory, our niche. And it is an important market, not only because of its size. We see the market to be around 200 million people, but that market keeps growing much ahead of Western Europe. We are expecting GDP growth of around 4% in the next year or so, and that compares to less than 2% in Western Europe. These markets are underpenetrated. We have a lot of ability to continue to stimulate this market, and we think that we are very well based for achieving that, given the cost base what we have. And as said, it is a commodity, and in commodities, lowest cost wins. The markets, especially further east, continue to be deregulated. I mean, you will see a chart how we have been taking advantage of that, and we believe that we'll have further opportunities with that regard. Very importantly, now the macro environment is changing. We are seeing fuel price rising, and we don't think it is a bad thing from our perspective. That will put pressure on the weak performing airlines, and almost all of Central and Eastern Europe's incumbent national carriers perform very vulnerably with no profitability, no liquidity. So we shall see what happens to them. And we're seeing that it will fuel the consolidation game in Europe, and we could take advantage of that. We have been building our leadership positions in our markets. We have 57% of our total flown capacity in markets where we are the market leader. We are the leading low-cost carrier, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, Macedonia, and Bosnia and Herzegovina. And again, when you translate that into the environment, that high fuel price will require capacity discipline and ability to feed the higher input cost into the fare environment. When you are the leading airline in a market, you have much more ability and capacity to do so than just being one of the competitors there. And as you can see, 57% of our capacity actually is in markets which we pretty much control. And 40% is in markets where we are number two or number three, so still very strongly affecting the market with that regard. So we think that we are pretty well positioned for managing our sales, managing profitability of the business, going into a higher input cost era. The way we are delivering growth remains fairly similar to previous patterns. Two-thirds of the growth will be deployed on increasing frequencies on existing routes. 24% of the capacity go to airports which we are familiar with, which we operate, and we are joining existing airports, joining the dots, and less than 10% goes into new territories, either new airports or new countries. So we think that this is a very de-risked growth platform of the company, and makes the financial results very predictable as a result. Fiscal 19 is a fairly special year from our perspective. As we say, we remain focused on Central and Eastern Europe, and I think this is what you should be expecting us to deliver in the years ahead of us. Nevertheless, given the consolidation opportunities we are reacting on in the United Kingdom as well as in Austria, makes us somewhat biased for deploying more capacity in Western Europe as we speak. But this is, I think, more of a one-off. And in terms of proportion, I would expect that at least two-thirds of our growth capacity will be deployed in Central and Eastern Europe in the future. Nevertheless, we are in the process of building up our UK operations here and having a head start in Austria with 5 aircraft. But as you can see, we continue to fuel capacity into our core markets, Poland, Hungary, Romania. And also, we are quite excited about the opportunities in further east, and we are deploying capacity in Ukraine and Georgia. So just talking about Western Europe, again, we have said, and I think we will continue to pursue that strategy. Should a market consolidation opportunity arise, we would certainly consider that, and we would react on that. And don't think of M&As and those sort of things. It is more reacting on vacuums to backfill capacity of airlines what they may leave behind if they go back on or they backtrack significantly. London Luton is a good example. On the one hand, we took a measure for Brexit by setting up Wizz Air UK, but on the other hand, we also create an operating platform that could be a platform for taking advantage of further consolidation in the UK should that happen. And given Brexit, given the changing oil price environment, you could actually imagine that. In Vienna, we reacted to the failure of Air Berlin and Fly Nikki, and as said, we are taking a head start with 5 aircraft of that. Just back to Wizz Air UK, as you know, a couple of weeks ago, actually, we got licensed and we started operating Wizz Air UK, so that airline is now operational. Actually, it is now operating 3 aircraft, and that goes up to 8 aircraft fairly quickly towards the end of the year. We are not only looking west, we are also looking further east. Deregulation has been helping us increase capacity in that region. You can see that if you pick these countries like Georgia, Israel, Moldova and Ukraine, we have been launching quite a significant number of routes, 66 routes in total in those markets, delivering almost 2 million seats. So it is also very important, and access to market remains a key issue, but we are certainly seeing deregulation to be a continuous process that a little less predictable, but once it happens, we certainly want to grab the opportunities. Israel is a good example. 5 years ago, we didn't fly a single seat to Israel. Today, we are the largest international airline in that country. As you know, we have a significant aircraft order on hand. This is important, especially in the context of the market today. It is not easy to access the aircraft market right now. Aircraft, even the second-hand aircraft market is pricing up as a result of high demand. Now that could change with the fuel environment, but as we speak, I think we are very well placed strategically to be able to access aircraft, to be able to access the right aircraft at the right cost level going forward. I mean, given the magnitude of the aircraft orders that we have been placing, you can expect us that we are taking advantage on the pricing side of things. OEMs price aircraft and their assets on the basis of the order size. And as we were party to the ever larger single-aisle aircraft order last year, you can expect us getting pretty good market pricing as a result. Ian mentioned the credit rating. We think that will allow us to tap into much lower cost capital than before. So we will certainly improve the economics of aircraft ownership going forward as a result. We have 271 aircraft to be delivered between now and 2026, a few left of the CEO aircraft order, and early next year in 2019 we will start taking deliveries of the A321neo order, and a few years later in 2022 the latest aircraft order will kick in, again A320, A321neo aircraft. The A321, as said, is a very important aircraft for us, given that it's delivering 10% lower unit cost than the AC20. And once we start taking deliveries of the A321neo, that will add another 10% reduction on unit cost. So an A321neo will deliver 20% lower unit cost than the AC20 today, which is the core fleet for us. So we think that we are well positioned for continuing our journey to become the ultimate cost leader and the undisputed cost leader of any airlines in Europe. It is not only the cost side what we are focused on, but we are also focused on the franchise, the consumer franchise. Wizz Air.com has become one of the world's top airline websites. Actually, we are number 6 in the world. Only 4 US airlines and 1 European airline are ahead of us. And this is significant given the size of the franchise and the number of consumers we carry. I think I can safely say that Wizz Air is probably the most digital airline of the world, given our exposure to the market. Let's not forget that this is in the context of our consumers with an average age of 28. So the consumer is also pushing us. These are the millennials, so we have to be very technologically savvy to meet their requirements. We are the number one airline in Europe on Facebook. We have over 3 million Facebook fans, quite a bit of growth in the last period. We also accelerated our presence on Instagram. We are clearly digital and web and app-based, We have almost 2.5 billion page views registered in 1 year, and that number keeps growing. Interestingly, we have 2/3 of our interactions with consumers on smart devices, smartphones and iPad type of devices. I think that makes us fairly unique compared to the rest of the industry. So let me just summarize the presentation today. Again, we delivered 275 million euros. That's significantly ahead of the initial guidance that we provided. I know that the consensus was a bit more upbeat, but we were trying to give it a number, and you decided not to take it and ignore that. But I think we delivered against our commitment, and this is really what we can measure. We delivered 34% EBITDA margin, which is indeed the highest in the industry of any airlines. A very strong year in terms of growth, delivering 25% more capacity, 25% more passengers to 30 million. And very importantly and strategically, I think this is the most important issue for us, that we are increasing our competitive edges versus our competitors by controlling our costs. All airlines reporting cost creep, ex-fuel cost. We are reporting flat performance, and going forward we are seeing further opportunities with the rollout of the A321s, the induction of the A321neos, and the opportunities the credit standing of the company gives us. So we're seeing that we can offset the headwinds, and there are many of those, and actually we can be in a better position vis-a-vis our competitors. We keep gaining ground in terms of our market positions, obviously on the back of the growth what we are delivering, and on the basis of the competitive edges what we have, resulting from the business model, the ULCC business model, delivering this business at the lowest possible cost. The A321 is a big deal to us. It is a more efficient aircraft, better economics, higher margin, and now we've got 35% of the seats flown on the A321. At the end of the financial year 2019, we're going to have 44% of the seats flown on A321s. Investment grade rating gives us many opportunities for further lowering our costs, and actually we remain quite upbeat in our ability to observe the fuel headwind by reducing our unit cost and pass through higher input cost in the fares, and as a result we are guiding on net profit of 310 to 340 million euros. Thank you.
And we'll pass over to questions. Damien's got his hand up front.
Morning, Damien Burrough from RBC. Could I ask three questions, please? First of all, you mentioned about actions on the ancillaries. Could you elaborate a little bit more on what both the strategy and tactics are there to recover that? Secondly, on the credit rating, clearly that has implications for CapEx, but also could you talk a little bit more about how much scope there is to renegotiate payment terms with, for example, fuel providers, airports, banks providing credit card payments? You know, is there scope to sort of accelerate some of the cash flow gains there? And then very finally on Vienna, clearly there's Vueling, there's Laudamotion, and Germanwings, whatever it wants to call itself, in Vienna. Vueling failed in Brussels, so if we discount Vueling, where do you think your position in Vienna will be relatively unique? What do you think your USP in Vienna will be versus Lauda and Germanwings? Thank you.
Okay, well let me start with ancillaries. Actually, we have done very well on everything other than BEX in the reporting period. So if I look at the performance, actually we are up 2 euros on non-bag revenues. We have been able to dynamize many of the existing revenue streams. So for example, with Discount Club was significantly enhanced and increased. I mean, we are tracking 1.1 million members as we speak. I think we've successfully deployed the seat allocation model, gaining significant ancillary revenues there. Now we have a 30% uptake on seat selection. Where we have been failing is bag revenues, and certainly this is something that we are reviewing at the moment. So you can expect action on that. So specific to your question, I think this is really the biggest ticket item which we will come forward with. The problem we have right now is that when you deliver 90%+ load factor, you have issues with bags, and you need to sort those bags somehow. And at the moment, the current bag policy is not only affecting ancillary revenue performance negatively, but also it's affecting operations negatively. And this is something what we are reviewing, and well, I don't want to speculate, but I think fairly quickly, certainly in a couple of months, we're going to be out with a new approach and action on that. And we're seeing that is going to reverse the current trends on bag revenues. But on everything else, actually, we are doing very well. With regard to Vienna, and then I will pass it over on the credit rating to Ian. I think we want to be the lowest cost producer in Vienna, and let's not forget that we are deploying our own operating platform. With all due respect to Laudamotion, their cost is not going to be nowhere near to our unit cost, and all the others, Eurowings, Vueling, others, will have significantly higher costs than what we are delivering. Well, we will certainly make sure that we take advantage of the A321s we have on hand, and we will become a very formidable competitor at very low cost in Vienna. So we're seeing that, based on the logic of the industry and consumer demand, this is a commodity, lowest cost will prevail and lowest cost will win. So we're seeing that our cost base will position us very well to compete with anyone there. Short term, it's probably going to be pressure on yields. It's going to be pressure on financial performance. But long term, once the dust settles down, I think we'll be fine. We have seen this in many markets. We've seen this in Budapest, in Warsaw, in the Baltics, in Romania and Bulgaria. This is a fine game to play. It probably takes a year or 18 months, and then everyone calms down, and we'll take it from there. And, for so long as you are the lowest cost producer, I think you're going to win.
Yeah, maybe adding another comment on Vienna. I think we do have a slight edge. I mean, Vienna is on the doorstep of Central Eastern Europe. It's only a three-hour train journey. So we've been looking at Vienna as a base for many years. A lot of Hungarians, a lot of Slovakians living in Vienna. So in terms of the brand, we actually have pretty significant brand awareness already. So I wouldn't compare Vienna to, let's say, launching a base in another Western European country where we have limited local brand awareness. So I think Vienna certainly poses a very good opportunity for us. On to the credit rating, I think in terms of renegotiating, I mean, that's in our DNA. We renegotiate every day, contracts on an annual basis, on a two-year basis. So certainly we will be looking to use that credit rating as leverage. Specifics, credit card or card acquiring, we actually already have pretty good terms. That's an area we've already been driving lower. There aren't any cash collateral requirements. So your question on releasing cash, that would come in more of the form of letters of credit. So we choose to actually collateralize our letter of credit facility. We have 175 million euros of cash with a bank as a collateral on those letters of credit. We could convert that to unsecured financing, but there's a cost. So when you see deposit rates at minus 50 basis points, actually it's a good use of cash. So we could release that fairly quickly if we wanted to. So in terms of actually releasing the cash, I would say no. There's no immediate targets for that. Where I think it will really come into force will be, as you say, I think in terms of airports, in terms of, the fuel providers, it depends really on the market. If it's more of a monopoly, unlikely. But it's really on the big asset, which is the aircraft. So sale and leaseback, if you're a lessor and you're essentially lending to an investment grade company like ourselves, then you'll be getting better terms. Then you have the on-balance sheet financing. I mean, five-year euro money, you're looking at 1.3% in terms of interest rates. Seven-year money, 1.7%. So if you compare that to the embedded financing charge of leases, when we announced our investment grade credit rating, we had quite a few lessors knocking on the door saying, what does this mean for us? So you can see the value that credit rating will bring to us. It may be that we will still do sale and lease back because I think we can have that, you know, a little bit more leverage. So it's only a good thing to have that investment grade. And certainly when you look at on balance sheet financing, there are a lot of compelling arguments to bring them on balance sheet, not only from a cost perspective, but also from a fleet flexibility perspective as well.
Hi there, good morning. It's Bashika Sojani from Barclays. Can I just ask you to talk about how you think about balancing growth with your margin? So, you know, you clearly have a very kind of strong pipeline of new aircraft coming in. You've got the growth in the UK and Vienna in the short term, plus rising input costs. So it might be fair to assume that the margin could come under a bit of pressure in the short term. But I think you'll tell me that's the reason why you slowed your capacity growth. So maybe you can just talk about how, you know, are you committing to the flat margin and is that how you're still running the business? Thank you.
Okay, I think we have a few levers on hand, but we have a few issues to deal with, and you need to put those next to each other. I think the levers that we have on hand, certainly A321, A321neo. The A321neo is not going to be greatly affecting fiscal 19. We're just going to start taking deliveries next year, so it's a marginal impact. But the A321 keeps growing in proportion of the fleet, and that makes a significant impact. As said, you know, A321 seat capacity is going to move from 35% today to 44% at the end of the financial year. This is a unit cost reduction of 10%. I think we have talked a lot about the credit rating and the opportunities that gives us as a result, and you know, we're gonna start affecting the business on that basis. We are a cost manager business. So when we have the option to decide between cost and, you know, reducing cost or chasing revenue, we always decide the cost line and not the revenue line. So you can expect us to remain incredibly and very disciplined on managing cost in the business, item by item, issue by issue. And as a result, as you see, we are guiding -1% reduction of ex-fuel cost. Now, you need to put that against the market. I mean, you know, our competitor, I think, is guiding 5 or 6% unit cost increase going forward. So we're seeing that we have an inherent cost advantage in the business, which is obviously turning into a structural advantage versus our competitors. We were talking about the positions of the airline in different markets. We have over 40% of our capacity non-competing with any airlines. So we are the only game in town from an airline perspective, and actually that proportion has been growing over the last period. It used to be 30-some percent. We are the leading airline on 57% of our capacity. So I think our ability to manage fuel pass through, you know, has become much greater than ever before. I mean, we need to play the capacity discipline ourselves. And as said, you know, we are not an airline set up for growth. I mean, growth is a great thing, and obviously it excites us very much, but we are an airline set up for delivering the financial metrics. So our number one objective is to deliver the margin of the business and the profitability of the business as a result. Growth is always just an output to that. And we have been guiding the market on structural 15% growth, you know, with the flexibility of moving up or down depending on market circumstances. We took advantage of the last period, probably the best of the industry over the last few decades, and we moved growth up to 20%+. Now we are still holding 20%, but you know, we are not religious about 20%. If the fuel price goes crazy and it's totally out of control, we would be reviewing our own capacity and we would be adjusting capacity as a result to make sure that, you know, we maintain the performance on the financial metrics. We have not been talking about, you know, the behavior of others, but you could expect, and this is empirical, I mean, we have seen that happening fairly consistently, that especially when approaching an off-peak period, winter period, and input costs are rising, then you see a lot more capacity discipline playing into the game. So you can expect weaker airlines with no liquidity, with no profitability, to be pushed for, you know, contracting capacity or even going bust if it becomes that bad. So we're seeing that the capacity environment will improve as a result, which will improve the fare environment, and that will improve the ability of the industry to pass through fuel cost into the fare environment. But even without the others, I think we are much more capable today of controlling our own destiny, and that's why we think that we're going to be able to hold our commitment on delivering the margin performance of the business.
Maybe a couple of other comments. I mean, to Joe's point about the weak carriers, I mean, we'll certainly help them on their way out. You know, they're going to be struggling going into the winter. The fuel prices are going to be higher. They're going to be hemorrhaging more cash. So you can bet your bottom dollar we'll be the ones helping them on their exit. Just one thing to add, maybe the timing of fuel prices, which is actually fairly helpful. You know, a fuel price spike in December doesn't give you much time to adjust your capacity. So what we've been seeing now, a fuel price spike between, you know, before summer, all airlines tend to make money. Most of them make money in the summer. So you don't really see the capacity adjustments coming through the summer. But the lead time that airlines have now is that they will have the ability to adjust their schedule. So I think if you look at our numbers, in the last fiscal year in Q4, we grew capacity by 24%. This year, we're looking at around about 18% in Q4. Certainly the second half. So I think you can see that we are demonstrating discipline, but there will be opportunities where we'll need to help our competitors lead the market.
Thank you, Mark, from Fortescue, from Panmure. Just on that point, really, if you could just talk a little bit more about the consolidation theme, particularly looking east, where consolidation has been a bit more benign in Eastern Europe than Western Europe. I mean, maybe in two parts. If deregulation does increase, what's your sort of priority of opportunities there, organic versus buying something? And then if deregulation is slower to come through, do you really still think there will be opportunities as you know, in a higher fuel price environment? It's quite hard for us to assess, you know, the financial condition of some of these legacy players. It's quite opaque. Can you give any sort of color on your thinking there?
Yes. I think my starting point would be, to look at the overall economic context of Central and Eastern Europe. Central and Eastern Europe is growing at a rate of around 4% on GDP. The prediction is 4 to 5% on most of the markets we operate from, and that compares to 1.5 to 2% in Western Europe. Typically, what you see is that the airline growth, the industry growth, is around twice of that of GDP. So, if you know you see 4 or 5%, you may expect kind of 9 to 10% airline growth. That's actually quite consistent with what we are seeing today. Today, the whole of Europe is growing at around 6% on airline capacity. And within that, Central and Eastern Europe is around 11%. And it's just a better overall market, probably, and more low-cost carriers, so actually you can stimulate more markets that by traditional carriers in Europe. So I think that GDP growth, that overall economic context, creates a lot of stimulation opportunities in the marketplace. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, if you look at a country like Hungary or Poland, around 16-18% of the population fly, so more than 80% have never flown in their life. I mean, that would be, you know, 60% of the Brits flying with 40% non-flyers. So there is a long way to go on penetration, and, you know, under-penetrated market with high GDP growth, that's going to create a lot of stimulation opportunities. And it has nothing to do yet with deregulation, whether deregulation happens or not. Deregulation, we believe, from our perspective, is more of a sideline strategy. It is more opportunistic than strategic, and we don't control that. I mean, this is all political. Countries may decide to create access to markets or may not. But our track record is showing that actually we can be very successful in grabbing those market opportunities. But if you look at it today, certainly when you look at base capacity, we are deploying around 80% of our capacity on markets in core Central and Eastern Europe, and probably around 10% to Western Europe and 10% to further east. So I would say that we are not really betting on that, but should further deregulation happen, we certainly going to be there to carry the flag of low cost into those markets.
Hi, Nana from Numis Securities. Just two really quick ones. Just to follow up on Damien's question on the baggage issues, I just wondered if you could give us a feel on what's giving you confidence that those dilutive impacts on checked baggage have now all come through, given the surprises that you did face. And I know that you'll obviously be lapping easier comps, but just a bit of a feel on your view on that. And then just in terms of labour costs, I mean, I know you've given guidance for 8 to 9% for FY19, but should we think of that as going further forward at that sort of rate for FY20 and beyond? Is that sort of just an underlying theme, or is that how much of that is pressurised by the tightness of the general market within pilots, etc.? Thank you.
I mean, in terms of labour costs, we've been making adjustments to our pilot and cabin crew salaries every year. You tend to see once every couple of years that there's a bit of a bump. The last time we did it, we increased the sector pay of pilots, I think it was 3 years ago, and so this year it was due for another rise. So you would have seen at the back end of last year, we implemented some changes in the second half, so that's why you're seeing a 5% increase in fiscal 18, and as you go into fiscal 19, the full year effect will be 8 to 9%. Are we going to expect to see 8 to 9%? I certainly hope not. We're looking at something slightly lower than that. Onto the baggage, it's I suppose reinforcing what Joe said on all the things that we did very well. So we saw a plus €2 per pax on all the value add, and there are a number of areas. Certainly we can increase the penetration, increase the conversion. I think certainly we can do a better job on conversion on the mobile. We tended to focus a lot of our initiatives on the web and then migrate onto the mobile. But mobile, you're seeing the penetration and usage increasing significantly. So certainly there's a bit to do on making sure that we get the same level of conversion on the mobile apps, which is all in the pipeline. On the bags itself, I mean, it's been a little bit of a headache for the past 5 years. I think I've always had the same chart saying it's going to bottom out. And the change in the cabin bag policy was underestimated. I mean, the cabin bag we knew was €2 per passenger per year, but I think we had underestimated the impact on the checked-in bag. So the changes will be, I would say, more in line with what the industry is doing, so certainly encouraging people to check in your bags. That will certainly help the on-time performance, less bags, less disruptions in terms of the operational side. But I think there is more of a desire for passengers to take their bags through the entirety of the journey. So you should hopefully start to see improvements coming through on, let's say, the priority side of the equation, where if you don't want your bag to be taken off you at the gate, you'll need to pay for it. So these changes are coming through within the next few weeks, and hopefully we'll start to see some real improvement from June, and I'll report back in July at our Q1 numbers to see how that's doing.
Morning, it's Alex Patterson from Investec. Congratulations on the results. Can I just look slightly further ahead? What do you think your capacity growth will be beyond FY19? You've previously given a longer term target. Does the slightly slower capacity growth next year mean that you get slightly more the year after to balance it out, or does that get pushed back? And what do you think do you have any visibility on any of your competitors in terms of their longer term growth?
I think our growth will remain subject to market conditions and our ability to deliver financial results, profitability mostly. And as said, we are not planning on growth in the first case. We are planning on financial performance in the first case and attaching growth to it subject to conditions of the market. Structurally, we're seeing this model is capable of growing 15%, and this is how we have been lining up the aircraft order to deliver capacity to the business by creating significant flexibilities, both for upping capacity and taking capacity down, again depending on market conditions and our ability to deliver financial results. I think it's fair to say that we are still very upbeat about market conditions overall. Yes, fuel is an issue, but we think we can deal with it. But overall demand is very strong, and we're seeing that our relevance to the market, given the business model and the improving awareness of consumers, actually help us achieve more than before. Whether that translates into 20% or 15% growth rate, I don't know. I think for modeling purposes, I would look at 15%, but if the market conditions are better than the baseline assumptions, we would certainly do more, as we did over the last few years. What we are seeing at the moment, assuming there is no significant market deterioration or disruption, we think we likely to be more than 15% beyond fiscal 19. We could be, you know, 17-18%, or even more, again depending on market conditions. But structurally, we think this model is a 15% growth model.
I mean, maybe Alex, maybe to I think one of the other constraints is probably the operations. I would say that this year growing 25% was probably the maximum that we could do in terms of the operationals. We could probably have grown at 30% and delivered the performance. But I think operationally is going to be one of the questions, I think, in the industry. The other things I think you're probably seeing as the market is that I think aircraft availability for our competitors, pilot availability for our competitors is going to be also a bit of a constraint on market capacity. Joe highlighted the, you know, the fantastic aircraft order that we've secured. We have a very enviable pipeline of aircraft coming online. So I think the market is going to find difficulty getting their hands on aircraft. So you know, that would suggest that we could grow, certainly continue to grow above market growth levels. In terms of the competition, I think what we're seeing is Spain seems to be recovering, so you'll probably see the traditional Western European carriers going back to Spain. The Monarch departing will certainly give some opportunity to them. Germany seems to be a bit of a hot spot at the moment, so you're seeing a lot of capacity going to Germany, and we are seeing some, you know, capacity being redeployed from our markets into places like Germany and the like. So I think the competitive environment certainly looks very constructive, and the capacity environment from competitors looks very constructive going into the next year. Handing over to questions on the phone.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 0 and then 1 on your telephone keypad now. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel, and there'll just be a brief pause while questions are being registered. And the first question is from the line of Mark Simpson from Goodbody. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Yeah, morning, guys. Two questions. Just want to go back to ancillary, the non-bag component. You talked about the value add obviously doing well, but if you look at the half-year splits on an ASK base, RASK non-bag was up 17.4% in the first half, up only 7.9% in the second half. So I'm wondering if you can just talk about that kind of seasonal split there or the kind of longer-term run rate you'd expect in terms of RASK, or maybe just give us a sense of guidance for FY19 on the non-bag side. And then also just want to check on the fuel front. In your full-year guidance, you have the line plus 15% fuel CASK. Then you've got fuel price of $685. That $685, is that what you're saying is the blended, or is that what you're saying is the market price that you're assuming ex your hedge position? I just want to clarify, you know, what makes up your 15% fuel CASK.
So the in terms of the math, so what I would look at in terms of the plus 15, so the 685 is the spot rate going into that. You're seeing the liquid price up around about 22%. So interplane premium doesn't move with the price of fuel. So when you look at the actual all-in price or fuel year on year, taking into account the hedging, we have around about 19%. Then you adjust for the favorable dollar. So last year it was 110. This year, you're looking around about the 119 versus 115. So you're seeing about a 4% improvement on that. And we have more and more A321s. The Sharklets coming in, so that's giving you some consumption. So you're seeing about a 20% increase on the fuel. You're seeing some tailwind from the FX around about 4%, and then you're seeing about a 1% coming through from the consumption. That gets you to your 15%. I think the question, your next question is going to be the price today is 740, although the price is not actually down today. What is important is that you'll be looking to, you know, the RASK environment will be reflective of the fuel environment. So the fuel environment of 685 is giving us a 3% RASK improvement. If we push the fuel environment higher, then, you know, it's our objective to make sure the RASK responds accordingly. In terms of ancillary, it was a bit of a mathematical question. I think I lost my way a little bit on that.
Essentially, your RASK your RASK on non-bags was up 17.4% first half per pax. Per ASK, it was up 7.9 only in the second half for the overall performance for the year of 12.7.
Only up. I think a couple of points, maybe jumping to, I mean, our revenue still is 42% ancillary, and the aim will be for that to increase. I wouldn't guide specifically on RASK for bags per quarter or half year. I mean, ultimately, we've always stated ancillary is incredibly important to us. We should be delivering €1 per pax per year. We haven't delivered that on the past few years, and last year was a disappointment. But what I would say is that should start to recover, and the checked-in bag portion of that will start to see a return to, you know, the positive territory. And in terms of the value add, that should also be increasing. So, you know, certainly I would just keep tracking what we've done in the past and be looking for positive improvement on ancillary per pax per year. Will we achieve a 1%, €1 per pax for the full year? That's our ambition, albeit a very stretched one.
Okay, and just going back to the kind of leverage between fuel price spot and your pricing, that suggests that you think that's coming through more quickly than the usual. It happens 12 months out. I mean, it sounds as though, given the lower level of hedges that the market has generically, that actually market pricing or fares will respond more rapidly than has been the case, you know, in the past. In the face of where fuel prices are?
Well, I think the difference this time versus last time, as far as we are concerned, is that, you know, 40% of our capacity is non-competing with airlines, so essentially we are the market. So, by constraining capacity, disciplining our own capacity deployment, you know, we can affect the market pretty much immediately. And in 57% of the overall capacity, you know, we are the leading airline in the marketplace. I mean, this is a much more significant position than ever before. So our ability, again, to affect the market is much stronger than before. I think simply we just think that we can play the capacity discipline game. Thus, the fuel cost feeds through into the fare environment much quicker and much more effectively than previously.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
And next question is from the line of Jerry Castle from UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thanks. Morning, gents. Two, if I may. Firstly, just coming back to capacity. I mean, just call it $80 Brent. I mean, how much further would it have to go up before you'd reduce your 20% capacity guidance? Is it $5, $10, et cetera? And then just secondly, just given the investment grade rating and the strength of the balance sheet, are you thinking any differently in terms of consolidation and the opportunities that may or may not be out there at the moment?
Okay, let me start with the second one. With regard to consolidation, I don't think we are planning on it. So the numbers we are presenting to you excludes any assumptions on consolidation. So I think it is rather an opportunistic matter. We are not going to buy airlines. That just wouldn't fit the model what we have. But, you know, should we have an opportunity to access the infrastructure, what we are unable to do because airlines are departing and those sort of things, yes, we would have an interest in. But, you know, simply this is unpredictable at this point in time. But, you know, we just want to make sure that we have contingency plans in place and, you know, we would have capacity in place to move around, you know, should that opportunity just arise. But you don't see that assumption, any of these assumptions in the in the plan, so that would come on top of what we are doing and what we are counting in. With regard to capacity versus the fuel price, I don't think we have gone that far mathematically. But certainly I can just repeat what I've said, that we are much more capable and able to own our own destiny in terms of delivering the financial metrics vis-a-vis a changing input cost environment, but I would certainly say that, you know, if if fuel goes crazy and it really spikes up, you know, to levels what, you know, we were seeing years back, I mean, this is going to distress the industry. I mean, this is not an issue to us. This is going to be a much greater issue to the whole industry. And again, just putting that in context, we are operating and focused on Central and Eastern Europe. In Central and Eastern Europe, not a single national carrier is financially fit for dealing with a situation like that. I mean, they have no liquidity, they have no profitability. So yes, on the one hand, it would be, you know, painful to us, but on the other hand, I think that would create plenty of opportunities to offset that pain, certainly throughout a certain period of time.
Okay, thanks. And one more, if I may, but has there been any attempt by your staff to unionize? Obviously, you've seen a bit of wage inflation like the rest of the industry, but is, you know, is labor relations good at the moment?
We think so. You know, we try to be very proactive in managing labor relations in the company. I personally don't think that union is the way to go. I mean, you know, it can actually stress the organization. It can stress the development of the or distress the development of the business. We have been very proactively engaging with our employees. We try to understand what's going on, what issues, opportunities they see, you know, to give them the opportunity to speak up in different channels, and management tends to act on that feedback. And, you know, we want to maintain that culture. We think that that culture has been a key contributing factor to the success of the company, and we certainly hope to be able to maintain it. We don't see any emerging pressure as we speak that could change that game, but you never say never. So, I mean, we know the industry, and we know how the industry is working, but so far so good.
Thanks very much.
And next question is from the line of Ross Harvey from Davy. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Ross Harvey from Davy, your line is now open.
That was the easiest question.
Okay, as there is no answer, I will move to the next question, which is from Andrew Loppenberg from HSBC. Please go ahead, Andrew, your line is now open.
Oh, hi there. Could I ask for a bit of guidance, if you're able to, get, on future CapEx, beyond 19, as we move to a world planning on taking aircraft onto balance sheet. I don't know whether you'll be able to give us anything, but let's ask. Secondly, if I can focus on, you kindly gave some IFRS 16 net debt guidance. Can you explain why that drops quite significantly from fiscal 18 to fiscal 19, given that the obviously the size of the fleet is increasing? Are you taking aircraft on short terms, or what's driving that? And then third question, staying on the aeroplanes, how confident are you in the delivery schedules for the years that they still seem somewhat troublesome at the moment? Thanks.
Okay, let me start with the last question with regard to aircraft deliveries. With regard to the current technology aircraft deliveries, it's been brought in line with contractual commitment. So, you know, we experience, you know, little delays here or there, but overall, I don't think it has really affected the business substantially. So, I think with regard to current engine option deliveries, we are fine. Now, with regard to NEO deliveries, they come up in January 2019. Obviously, we have been keeping an eye on the market, and we have been heavily engaging with the OEMs, both Airbus and the engine manufacturer, Pratt & Whitney. I think we understand the situation there. We understand that the engine manufacturer is in catch-up mode at the moment. So far, we have been assured that we should not be expecting significant delays on those delivery, but you know, we continue to monitor the situation, and you know, we will alter our plans, you know, should the situation change. But so far, we've actually been certain that by and large, those deliveries will happen as contracted.
The two questions. In terms of the future CapEx, I think there's two things. One, in terms of what the PDPs on the aircraft deliveries, as I highlighted, that we've actually had a step up in fiscal 18 by around about 125 million euros because of taking essentially 10 aircraft in the next 18 months. So that will start to be returned as those aircraft. And so in terms of the PDP on the streams, you should start to see a net cash inflow coming through. I can't give you the magnitude. In terms of the future CapEx on the NEOs, the decision has not yet been made. You know, we're in the process. Obviously, we'll be looking at all options. There are a number of options, JOLCOs, whether it's sell and lease back, on-balance sheet financing, the capital markets. It's a bit too early, Andrew, to give you the guidance on that one. And then on IFRS 16, it's maths. Essentially, the way IFRS 16 works on the leases, it's the time to the end of the lease. So obviously, leases are going to be dropping off, and those that are dropping off are at very different interest rates. So I think it's purely a mathematical calculation in terms of why that number will be dropping down to fiscal 19.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and we do have registered Ross Harvey again. So, Ross, please go ahead.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Line is open.
Loud and clear, Ross.
Excellent. I just have one question. So I was just wondering, in light of the fact that you're moving 10 aircraft, I guess, opportunistically into Luton and into Vienna, can you give a sense of what the ex-fuel CASK development would have been in FY19 were it not for these new, presumably more costly airports? And you know, what I'm trying to get at is the impact of the increasing overall size of the company and the gauge and what the impact would have been on like-for-like costs. Thanks.
I don't think it will move the needle. I mean, certainly there will be a little bit more inflation. The items where you are seeing certainly, I mean, Luton is, you know, the airport costs are within line with the corporate average. So from an airport cost perspective, it's actually in line. Yes, the crew costs are slightly higher. So you're seeing a little bit of cost creep coming through on the crew side. So essentially on the Luton side, no real major impact. And it's also important to look at what's at the other end of the route. So those flights from Luton to Central Eastern Europe, there are some very low-cost airports. So from an overall ex-fuel CASK, Luton doesn't really move the needle. Now, there are a couple of million in terms of setting up that AOC and having people based there. So you're looking at about 2 million. So to sort of run that through the numbers. And Vienna, again, we had a very good airport deal. It's not dissimilar to a Bucharest or a Budapest or a Warsaw. So I don't think that's really going to be moving the needle. What I would say is that we're committed to maintaining ex-fuel CASK. So on the airport side is that the challenge that we pose ourselves is for any primary airport that brings in a little bit of inflation on the airport cost needs to be more than offset by somewhere at the other end that gives you, below average airport costs. So from that perspective, I think the one area that we saw and maybe we flagged in Q3 was the training. So taking 17 aircraft in 17 weeks does put a lot of stress on the organization. That delivers an awful lot of pilots and cabin crew and training. There are slightly different training procedures for the UK AOC. So therefore, you see a training period, growing from a few months to maybe 6 or 7 months. So that's something that should start to flow through, and we should start seeing the benefit going into fiscal 19. So certainly the training part of the organization. I mean, taking 17 aircraft in 17 weeks is pretty ambitious for any airline, and I think something we'll be doing less of in the future.
I mean, just one kind of mathematical perspective to the question. So when you compare our operations in Western Europe versus Central and Eastern Europe, essentially 75% of the cost would be the same, because 75% of the cost would depend on aircraft utilization, would depend on fuel cost and oil charges, which are common irrespective of the origination of the aircraft. So we have around 25% of the cost that are subject to the market, and typically labor and airport related costs. So if you just run the math, even if we see like a 10% increase of cost in Western Europe compared to Central Eastern Europe, this is affecting the overall cost 2.5%. If it's 20%, it's affecting 5%. So that's why Ian is saying that we are seeing a marginal difference in overall cost in Western Europe compared to Central Eastern Europe. And again, whatever we are doing in a more costly environment, you know, we make sure that we offset that in a less costly capacity deployment on the destination end of the equation.
That's very interesting. Thanks.
And that was our final question, so I will hand the call back to the speakers. Please go ahead.
With that, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. Any further questions, just follow up directly. Thank you.
Thank you.